popping off the griddle. Pull up on a kid if you're trying to get belittled. All the mamas love me now, I think I'm being brittle. Flex the rainbow.
All right, welcome to this week's Plates and Pancakes. We're sitting down with head football coach of Archie, Drew Smith. Drew, I don't know a whole lot about you, but we'll get into your bio. Are you from Concordia?
Yes. So I traveled around a lot growing up, but I grew up primarily in Concordia.
And you played football there?
Yes.
Where did you go to college?
Southwest Baptist University over in Bolivar, Missouri.
Right. Mm-hmm. So just north of Springfield?
Yep.
Did you play any ball there or just a student?
I was just a student. I played 1 year of baseball. I got injured. So I just decided to hang it up. I wasn't that in love with it anyways. So 1 year of sports there and that was it.
Now is that Division II?
They kind of jump back and forth between NAIA and Division II. It was Division II when I went there. So I don't know where they are right now, but they jump back and forth.
Coaching experience. How many years have you been a head coach and where have you coached at?
Head coach for football. This is my third year. I also coach girls basketball. I was a head coach for girls basketball up north in North Mercer, Missouri. It's way up north by Iowa. So I coached there 3 years as a head coach there. And then also while I was up there, I was an assistant coach for 3 years. Four years up there as an assistant football coach for Princeton, Missouri. They co-op in sports, uh-huh. So I actually taught at Mercer. And then we co-opt in football, so I was an assistant there for 4 years.
Now, was that an 8-man team or 11-man team?
No, 11-man.
For those of you who don't know, Archie is an 8-man school, and I'm sure we'll get into that here in a little while, but yeah. We'll just keep moving forward here. Family, you married, kids?
Yeah, I'm married. I've been married for 6 years. Wife, Natalie Smith, used to be Natalie Stiles. She grew up in Spring Hill, Kansas. Mm-hmm. We don't have any kids. I don't think we really plan on having kids. Her passion has been like foster care. Okay. She's into social work. So we've been looking into foster care. We dabbled in foster care a little bit a couple months ago. And now we've moved and we're in the process of trying to build. So we've kind of taken a break from foster care right now. But that's kind of where we're looking at with that.
So some more personal info, but a little bit lighter. What's your favorite movie?
Favorite movie? It's the tie between Saving Private Ryan and Remember the Titans.
A tie in a football movie in there. Yeah. If we were to go to your car and turn on your playlist, what are you listening to?
Well, honestly, it would be whatever I was playing that day in weights class. But honestly, I really like NF. He's a kind of a rapper that doesn't really cuss very much, but I really like his what he talks about and how he vocalizes things. So I really like NF.
When you get done with the season or your end of the night, weekend, you get time to yourself, time with you and your wife. What do you guys like to do to unwind?
It's a tricky question. To unwind, I talked to my wife about what went wrong during games and what I need to fix it for next week in practice. And then she just kind of listens and then we'll watch a Netflix show together. We're kind of big on just watching. We like to watch shows together to unwind. So after I get done talking about what happened in a game or whatever, we'll just kind of unwind and just kind of watch a Netflix show on the TV.
What do you guys enjoy watching together?
Oh, shoot. Well, we love The Office, but that's no longer on Netflix. We really like Schitt's Creek.
Yeah.
We really like that show. And then, there's a couple others out there, but I think we've watched that twice now. I'm a big Seinfeld guy. She's uh-huh. not. I love Seinfeld. So I watch Seinfeld by myself. We also like Lord of the Rings, so we'll watch those two together.
All right. So you got plenty of things in common to watch.
Plenty.
Sometimes that's a task in itself, finding something you both want to sit down and watch.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
So on to your program. What do you find is your biggest daily obstacle?
So I've been thinking about that. Probably making sure that I'm prepared to where I just want everything to run smoothly because I'm constantly adjusting, fixing things, changing things up to maybe make it run more efficiently and to be the best possible for the kids. So I'm constantly critiquing myself and I'm trying to change things change things up. And so I think that's my biggest task is making sure that I'm prepared constantly of what I want to do and how I want to attack it.
At Archie, it's smaller than Adrian. It's actually probably dropped in kids over the last few years. So you have a small program. What are the challenges of building and maintaining a program in a smaller school?
Getting everyone out. That was our first challenge when we got here. When we first took over the program 3 years ago, the football team before us had, I think, 18, 19 kids. Our first year, we jumped up just because we dropped down to 8-man, a new coach. It was just different. We jumped up to about 28, and then that's been my lowest number in the last 3 years. We went up to 30 last year, 32, and then we're at 35 this year. So just making sure that we get all the kids that want to be out and be a part of the program, making sure that we are I'm reaching them in the right way.
So understanding that in your environment, kids are a commodity, and they have to be worked with, but you also have to realize that every kid that comes out, you have to find a way to keep him out.
Yes, that's the biggest thing, is connecting with different kids in different ways. Just because I can connect with one kid one way, that's not going to fly, and that's not going to work for another
right.
kid. And I have to make sure that I'm able to connect with multiple different kids in different ways, though, so that they enjoy football. Because that's the biggest thing is I want as many people out for football, but I want them all to enjoy it. And if they don't enjoy it, that's perfectly okay with me. Like, it's not the end of the world. I don't hate them. I don't think of them any differently. I have great conversations with kids that don't play football. And so I want to make sure that they know that I'm there for them more than just football, but I would really love them to try football, and I want them to enjoy it. But if they don't enjoy it, it's okay. It's not the end of the world.
Yeah, at the end of the day, it's just an activity.
Yeah, just an activity, and it's a great chance for you guys to grow as men, learn some great characteristics and get great qualities that will help you moving on down the road. And if you don't, if it's not for you, that's okay. We can still have a good connection with each other.
In the different places you've been, how do you feel that dealing with small town kids is maybe a little different than country kids? Small town kids would be different than dealing with some other kids that maybe you've dealt with in the past.
That one, sometimes kids are a little bit, so up north where I came from, we were out in the country, but I don't want to dog on them, but they were really, really soft and just kind of felt like they were more city boys in a sense. Like, they were very country, but then, oh my goodness gracious, you asked them to do anything and it was the end of the world, or it was like beneath them in a sense. So coming to Archie, I haven't experienced that with these kids. Like, these kids are hard workers. They want to get better, and they really thrive on being challenged and pushed. And so I've really, really enjoyed that. And I've kind of been able to grow a little bit from Mercer and Princeton, from those kids that like finding different ways to challenge them and reach them. And I've been able to apply that here, and it's been able to take off faster than what I've anticipated, and kids buying in just because they kind of want that anyways. I kind of had to find that and really push it out of them and Mercer and push them and want it for them. These kids here want it. They just want someone to help push them.
Makes it tough when you feel like you're the one pedaling the bicycle.
Yes.
What have you seen as your biggest setback or failure in life and your career?
My biggest setback, which is actually what led me into coaching, I went to college to be a physical therapist.
Mm-hmm.
And I went in at exercise science. I was going to take the exercise science route, get into physical therapy school, and become a physical therapist. That didn't happen. I'm not smart enough. I really, really wanted it. But I had the bare minimum requirements to get into physical therapy school, which is like a 3.5 GPA. And you had to have certain grades on classes. And I just barely was squeaking in to be even eligible to be enter. And so just how competitive the physical therapy world was and is, I knew that I had no shot at ever getting in, really. So I kind of wish I would have been able to maybe take that more seriously or possibly go into athletic training, because I was going to do athletic training, then physical therapy. But then I decided I'll just do exercise science. So I kind of wish I would have done athletic training with the emphasis of physical therapy. So that would be my biggest setback or kind of thing that I regret. But it led me into coaching, and I absolutely love it. So like we were talking about earlier before, everything has a reason and a why, and you just don't know what happens. So.
Yeah, and maybe this is where you can do the most good.
Right, right.
Coaching philosophies. So when you're dealing with your kids on a daily basis, what are some of your philosophies that you use to help mold them into better humans?
I try to treat them with the most respect possible and show them what a good role model looks like. You can have fun, you can joke around, but it's all at the end of the day of how you treat people. I'm really big on treating others with respect and not fretting over the little things. Life's too short to worry about that stuff. And so I really, really do work on servant leadership of constantly doing things for kids. Something small, like, hey guys, hey, and I'll go pick up trash. And I'll be like, hey guys, hey, help me out, pick up trash real quick. And so I want them to see that even though you're in a head coach job and a football team, we can go pick up trash, we can go do the other things, and we don't have to put it off on someone else. It's not just the freshmen do it, or it's not just that. I try to show them that to be able to lead, you have to be able to be a servant leader first, and you have to be willing to do the stuff that no one else really wants to or really cares to do to build a good program and to be a good young man.
Now, you guys played Rich Hill last week. That game got away rather quickly. The final score was 94-0. Knowing you and talking to you just a little bit before this podcast, I thought maybe this would give you a chance to kind of explain that. There were some very angry fans. So I know you don't have Facebook. So
I don't.
I just wrote down a couple of posts here so that hear about them. Archie has no business playing 8-man against a team that can barely get players, was one.
Okay.
The game should have been called at halftime.
Okay.
And my personal favorite was the Red Bull U approach in the Bourbon Bowl. Archie should have downed it 3 times and punted when they got the ball.
Okay.
So what are your thoughts on the game, how that ended, final score?
I'll be honest. I did not want it to be 94-0. I did not anticipate it being 94-0. Going into that game plan, our thought was not, hey, we're going to annihilate this team as much as possible. I'm not going to say we're putting up 100. That never came out of my mouth. Never even was a thought. I've never really gotten close to putting up 100 on someone. So when I saw the game going the way it was, I had told the kids, because I'm big on building for the postseason.
Mm-hmm.
The whole season is up as like practice and preparation for when district starts. That's how I do in basketball. Everything. So I'm like, hey, we've got to make sure our boys are in shape for when we have a really good opponent, we're ready to go for 4 quarters because we have not played a full game up yet. So I said, all right, guys, you guys, the first stringers, you guys are going to play into the third quarter. This was before the game. Second team, get ready. Fourth, third, junior, JV guys, you guys are going to have your own game. You guys will get in, but you guys will have your own game on Monday. That was the initial thought process. When I realized it wasn't going to go like that, I was talking to my assistant coaches. I'm like, oh, gosh, I'm going to be a liar again because we're not going to go. Starters aren't going at halftime. And so they didn't start. I had someone got mad at me because I said that no one on Twitter, I said no starters played after halftime. Technically, that wasn't 100% true. It was just easier to summarize in a sense. We had a 2-point conversion package that we had just put in that week, and I wanted more reps at it, so I put it in, and I said, okay, guys, we'll get it one or two more times, that 2-point conversion, just get extra practice, live reps. Well, my JV have never ran it before, and so I put my starting quarterback out there to go hand the ball off because my JV quarterback had never ran it. So technically, it's not true. I did have one starter play the second half, so I want to make sure that was out there. But the whole game, we were two platooning the game on offense mm-hmm. and defense. We had our first and second stringers going back and forth all game on our skill side. So we had our first string going the first drive. My second string was going the second drive. The whole first half we were doing that.
Right.
We had some interceptions, we had some fumbles, and that just those led to quick touchdowns. So the game got out of hand, and then I gave it over to my JV, and they were still scoring. And we were running very basic plays. We were running our power game. We were just running power. We were running trap. We ran one sweep play, and we ran a counter play. Nothing crazy. We were just giving my JV reps against their varsity. And that was how the game went along. I don't have anything against Rich Hill. I don't have any personal vendetta against them. I know Rich Hill, they have, 24 players out or something like that. We just played a JV game against them on Monday. So I don't know. I don't know why. I mean, I get it. The score looks really bad. Would I have been mad if they scored on us? No. Am I proud that my JV held out? Yeah, I am. I am proud that my JV held out and didn't lend the score. Absolutely. But would I have been mad if they scored? No.
Right.
Not at all. So it is what it is, and I didn't mean anything by it. I wasn't trying to run out the score on anyone. I wasn't trying to embarrass anyone. It happened. Also, one point is it kind of looked like we were trying to onside the ball. That is not all.
I heard a tee broke.
Okay, our tee did break, and we have a freshman kicker who we have been working with him because he can't quite make it to the end zone. And mm-hmm. So in my philosophy is if we can't get an end zone and we're pinning people deep, we're going to squib it to make it – to slow it down, give us time to get down there. So we were – I thought he knew what a squib was. He never told me he didn't know what a squib was. He said, okay, coach. And I go back and get a drink, and all of a sudden he onsides it. And then we get the ball, and I'm like, what just happened? So – and then I try to explain to him what a squib was. He didn't really understand it again, so he did like two more times of that, and then I just said, fine, we're just going to kick it deep. I'm not going to worry about it. So we're going to work out in practice. So
we've talked about that game, but on the other side of it, you have the number two team in the nation in your conference with Drexel, an eight-man. What are you anticipating with that coming up in the future?
A couple games. We got to get through Bishop. We got to get Osceola, and then we got to get to Bishop LeBlanc, who's a good team as well. But when we do get to them, I don't really know what to expect. They had some injuries over there, so we'll see. They might be a drastically different team, but I know that they'll be well coached, well prepared, and they are going to play hard for four quarters for sure. I know Coach Dean, he is going to have them ready to go and fired up. They're a number two team in the nation for a reason. They've got a tremendous talent over there in Jacob Coffey. I hope that kid is okay and not seriously injured like a lot of people think he is. And
right.
I hope he's not. But I think that'll be a fun game just to kind of go play a really good opponent and some really good players. And they have great experience because they just won a state championship last year. So that'll be a fun game for us. So I am looking forward to it.
I think that'll be an interesting game.
Yeah, I think so.
So in your conference with who you play, who is your biggest rival? Who would, if I was to ask your players who your biggest rival is, who would they say?
Well, right now I'd say it's with hands down Drexel. That is the one team that we have lost to in the last 2 years. We've lost to Drexel four times. So we haven't lost to anyone else but Drexel. So that would be our rival.
Personally, coaching, life, what makes you unique? What's a skill set you have that would be hard to replace?
That's an interesting question. I hate talking about myself like that. I am very dedicated to my job. I say that lightly because I know everyone's dedicated to their job, but I love my job. I wake up excited to go to work every day. Unless I'm dog sick and just can't get out of bed, I have not dreaded coming to Archie one day, not seeing the kids, not working with them. So I think that would be something that would be hard to replace for me in a sense, is just having that pure enjoyment of going to work every day, knowing what I love what I do and wanting to get the best out of kids and trying to motivate them to become the best possible version of themselves. That's truly who I am all about. And So I think that would be hard to replace me in a sense of just how much I love my job and how much I love the Archie community and how much I love what I do.
So you went to try to be a physical therapist. You've moved in to coaching. I know you do some strength coaching. What are your training philosophies? What are you looking for in the weight room?
Oh, I'm all about creating athletes. I don't care if you want to be a bodybuilder. That's great. That's not what my weight classes are designed for. We're designed about becoming tremendous athletes and more and comfortable with yourself, building confidence. I love it when I have kids that don't play sports, that they come in and lift weights. And I love, then that's where I'm like, hey, I'm not so worried about building an athlete. I'm worried about building confidence, mm-hmm. making sure that once you leave here, you feel confident going into the workout room and lifting weights and knowing these terms, knowing how to do different lifts and, just being able to, that's a life skill. I think everyone needs to be able to live healthfully is being in shape. And so giving them the confidence to go lift weights is huge. But then for the athlete side, it is building the best possible athletes. So we do a lot of plyometrics. Right now I'm in the middle of a power matrix cycle. Right now, I don't really like it, but it builds a lot of initial strength of just bench, squat, cleans. It's a 5-week cycle. Uh-huh. We just go through that. I got it from the other coach Coach Toski. I got it from him, and I really liked it. So we do that once a year, and so we're in the middle of that right now. But we do a lot of. I'm sure are you familiar with Cal Dietz?
A little bit. Okay. I actually had a few questions going into that.
But, okay.
The big cat mentality.
Yeah, yeah. I'm big. I love Cal Dietz. I think he's got some great stuff. We do a lot of isometric holds. We do eccentric slow down for 3 to 5 seconds and explode up. We hold at the bottom of the lift for 3 to 5 seconds and explode out of it. All about trying to build explosiveness. And then we also do feed the cats. I love the feed the cat system of never letting today ruin tomorrow. And that's something that's probably might be one of my biggest struggles right now is getting the athletes to believe that just because you don't leave the gym exhausted and tired and sore the next day that you didn't get anything out of it. So that might be my biggest struggle right now, actually, that I think about it.
I've heard Jim Windler. I don't know if you've heard of Jim Windler. He invented the 5-3-1.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Amazing to listen to. Mm-hmm. But he talks about that. Every day is a rung on a ladder.
Yep.
And you push too hard today, you may gain a rung, but the next 3 days you're going to lose a rung each of those days.
Yes.
You didn't come out ahead. So I think that would be very similar to feed the cat mentality.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Every day is just a little bit better.
It's huge. And just because, I mean, these kids are playing in a small school, you've got kids that are playing 3 sports. And so there's never really truly an off season for them. It might be their off season for volleyball or for football, but majority of our athletes play basketball. They play softball, track. So there's really not an off season where they're not working out and they're not exerting energy with their body. And so I have to be careful not killing them because I don't want to kill them because I don't want them to not have great efforts in their peak performance in their sport. But then also I've got to realize I do want to get strength and build them up. So and I really like this philosophy right now. And we've gained a tremendous amount of strength and agility and speed from it.
So managing volume.
Yes, huge.
Is it at the end of the day on the forefront?
Huge. So when we first, since I've started Feed the Cats, this program down here, when I first came to Archie, we had about 3 athletes that were running electronic time, sub 540s. Mm-hmm. We now have 12 athletes that run sub 540s. So I do think it's working, and I think the kids are really buying into it now that they're able to see those results. I'm also, along with the Feed the Cats philosophy, is I love to publish and rank and publish mm-hmm. and record. They love to see their numbers. They love to see it.
Yeah.
So I constantly tell them, hey, 21 miles an hour out here, whatever, 21.4, 21.2. Let's go get your max right here. We're going for this. This was your max 3 months ago. Okay, look how much you've improved 3 months ago. And then they're able to see, like, oh, okay, I had a bad day today, but I'm lifting 30 pounds more than I was 3 months ago or whatever it is.
Right. Numbers don't lie.
Yes. So it's really good to show them that the system is working, and that's really helped them buy into it and just say like, oh, okay, I had a bad day today. It doesn't mean I'm not getting better. I have been getting better because I showed them the numbers 3 months ago that shows this is where you were, this is where you are now. So a lot of times they miss that.
They do. And then thinking to some of the things Louis Simmons said, I don't know if you're familiar with Louis. Hmm. He created West Side Barbell.
Oh, yeah,
strongest
yeah.
gym in the world.
Yep.
He was very big on the better your plyos, the faster you're going to be. Mm-hmm. A box jump, your box jump directly carries over to the track. That's
yep.
one of the few exercises that he would put that much stock in to speed. So
we do a lot of depth jumps where we start high, we land, and we explode back up as high as we mm-hmm. can. Just that transfer of energy, transfer that weight, just being balanced and just explosiveness.
Yes, dynamic.
Yep.
Getting off the floor. So we're both friends with Brian Tenholder there at Archie. I know down here at Adrian, he started a class, a conspiracy theory class.
Okay.
Me and him enjoy talking about that. It seems like every week we bring up some sort of conspiracy theory.
Okay.
So you got to spend a little time down around Bolivar. It's pretty wooded, pretty uh-huh. hilly. You've seen a little bit of country in your life. You're up north Missouri. Do you think Bigfoot exists?
Hmm. No.
You don't?
I don't because... And I've read some, and I love Ancient Aliens. I don't know if you ever watched
that
show.
Oh, I'm a huge fan.
Okay.
I'm a huge fan.
I love Ancient Aliens. It's a great show. I just love listening to their off-the-wall conspiracy theories.
I agree.
I just can't believe that Bigfoot's existed, especially now with how much we record, how much people film things. We've got drones everywhere. I know there's a lot of part of America that is like secluded and... there's caves and everything like that. I just find it hard to believe that there's something that massive that is able to hide from hunters, not get shot, not be dead somewhere. I do love the theories, though, that they were brought here by maybe aliens, that maybe they were a subspecies that are, or maybe that they were the actual species of Earth and that we are the aliens that came down and made them extinct. I think those are fascinating, and I love to learn about it. I don't know. I can't wrap my head around it. I don't think they exist.
It's fair enough. It's just a theory.
Oh, yeah.
Until we can prove he does or he doesn't.
Yep.
It's just a theory.
But if we never find him, I guess that means we never can prove that he's
right
there.
All we have is stories, and yep. that's where we're stuck.
Yep.
I'm not planning on going to look for him anytime
soon. I will not venture into a cave that says there was a Bigfoot sighting. That's for sure.
Back to coaching. Working with kids. Everything that goes along with that. What is your biggest fear in coaching?
Letting my kids down. So last year, I never want to be the reason why we lost a game. I never want to go into a game and say, man, I let the kids down. I didn't prepare them well enough, or I didn't see this or whatever. That is probably my biggest fear. Last year in our district championship game versus Wellington Napoleon for girls basketball, I felt like I let the team down and was the reason why we lost, because I didn't realize a coaching change and make it fast enough. I let one of our girls get into foul trouble. I made an adjustment after she got into foul trouble that let her play the rest of the game, and it actually bettered our defense. And it was a close game in the fourth quarter. We were down by 8 with about 5 minutes left, and she just made an and one. It was a controversial call. She had an and one. It called a charge. I just firmly believe that if you cut that to a 5-point game with 4 minutes left, I think I was the reason, one of the biggest reasons why we lost that game was because I didn't make a coaching change fast enough and I didn't realize it. So that is my biggest fear as a coach, is that I let the kids down.
On Friday nights and in basketball season, basketball nights, that's where most people get their perspective of you. Most people get to watch you for 2 hours.
Tip of the iceberg, yep.
Yeah, and they get to see the most stressed, most competitive, most aggressive. They get to see all the qualities that you normally probably wouldn't let somebody see.
Mm-hmm.
What's the real you if you kind of break away from that?
I love to joke around. The kids know me at school. I love to mess around, have fun, joke. I'm relaxed. I have a different sense of humor. People say, some of the like the basketball girls, they say they can't tell when I'm joking and when I'm being serious. because I have a dry sense of humor. And I just tell them, if it sounds off the wall and it sounds ridiculous, I am joking. But I think that's the side that a lot of people don't realize, is that I really, really do care and love those kids like they're my own. And I just love to have fun with them and mess around and just kind of have fun. And just, life is too short to be taken so seriously. There's a lot of things in life that are taken too seriously, and we just need to relax and just kind of enjoy the ride. Like, high school is only 4 years. College is only 4 years. Does it make or break you? No. You're going to make whatever you want out of life if you work hard enough for it and you prepare yourself. You're going to make mistakes. It's not going to be perfect. But just to enjoy life and just not take everything so serious.
Looking into the future, I know you don't have a crystal ball, mm-hmm. but as you look out over what could be, what is the vision of success that you have in your head?
The vision of success. I would love to be able to look down the road, 20 years down the road, one, not be fired for me losing my head and doing something stupid. I think that would be great. The second one would probably, and the most important one would probably be having students that come back and say, "Hey, coach, you really helped me in high school, maybe through a tough time without me realizing it, and just saying, hey, you really helped me become something that I really wanted and I didn't know how to get there. I just really want to know that what I'm doing and what I love to do is making a difference. I feel like it is. I would just love to be able to see that 20 years down the road and say, like, hey, man, you used to be a knucklehead in high school. Something clicked. I don't know what it was. Blah, 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 blah. And then they're like, hey, coach, you really helped me by this. You showed me whatever the example was. And I would show me that I did it the right way. So I really hope that 20, 25, 30 years down the road, I'm able to see that from someone. And that would really kind of reemphasize that I'm doing it the right way.
I know you must operate off of what you feel are your values, mm-hmm. principles. What are your core values that you try to extend into your players to get them to understand what anything less is unacceptable?
Standard. The standard is the standard. I've got a couple of mottos. Get better every day, GBED. Every day is a new opportunity to be the best version of yourself. So put your best foot forward. Find a way to get a little bit better every day. We talk about it all the time. That is something that I'm huge on. And I'm like, guys, even if you get one little tiny percent better, you build on that the next day, you got 2% better. Okay, 2 weeks down the road, 14% better. You can see results from that. It's a slow process. And it's something that just, it's a slow process and it's a tough process. And just to realize that you are getting better and just to push yourself. And I just hope the kids realize that in life, it's a long life. There's going to be a lot of ups and downs, but if you keep every day waking up trying to be the best version of yourself, you're going to build good habits. You're going to set yourself up for success. And when the bad days happen, you're able to push through and persevere because you built a mindset of, I'm going to make today better than yesterday. I'm going to get a little bit better some way, somehow, no matter what life is thrown at you. So, and then also right off that, I tell the kids all the time that I love them. I want to make sure that they know that I care more about I care more than just their athletic ability. If you're the best player on the team, worst player on the team, I hope that they know that I truly do care for them, and that if there's any issues, that they can come to me if they need help with whatever. So I really do try to show that I do care for them, and I care for them more than just their athletic ability. I care for them as a human being, and I want them to I just want to love them and show them what it looks to. What it shows to live a good life. I'm a big Christian. I love the Lord. I love Jesus Christ. And I think that that's a hard thing for me being in a public school because I keep my faith in check, and I don't,
right.
I never do talk about and jam Jesus down anyone's throats. But I just love to show how Jesus lived a life of living it up, living for others, and just being a Christ, showing that Christ-like love without actually telling them that it's Christ-like love. And I just like to be that walking demonstration, and I hope that they pick up something from that, and it might plant a seed later on down the road. But
yeah, kids face a lot of challenges that a lot of times their parents don't even know about.
Right.
You know, so having somebody there with the principles you have and making yourself available and trying to live in a Christian-like manner, I'm sure, if it hasn't yet, I'm sure it will eventually affect some kid that really needs it.
Well, I hope so. And like I said, it's a tricky road because I definitely know I can't talk about it, and I don't. I just hope that my lifestyle and how I live my life shows that it's a Christ-like love and that Jesus is there for them, and I hope that they one day find it. And if they come back and say, hey, man, you helped me lead me towards Christ, I would love that. That would probably mean everything to me. But it's really tough just because I can't talk about it.
Right. School. Everything's it's a little different at school.
Yep.
Private life, religion. A lot of that's kept out. It's moving more and more that direction.
100%.
But through your personality and just how you act, I'm sure kids can tell a difference in you than maybe other people that they're around.
I hope so. Thank you.
What do you feel like might be keeping you from coaching at your fullest potential?
Fullest potential how?
It's a tough question, and people answer it differently. But is there something in your life that is kind of keeping you back, keeping you tentative, keeping you from really deciding to step out a little further outside your comfort zone? Something maybe that gain a little knowledge, ask for help from somebody? Is there an aspect of maybe a defense or something like that that you don't know that you really need to get some help on? You just haven't made that leap out.
I'm sure there's plenty of things that I do not know. I love asking questions, and I am not afraid to look stupid. So probably the biggest thing holding me back is probably that I'm not politically correct enough. And so I don't foresee myself getting anywhere bigger than Archie, just because of my I know what I want in life. And I'd say the thing holding me back is myself, in a sense, because I couldn't survive in a big school. I'd get fired real quickly just because I voiced my opinion, and my wife tells me that's politically incorrect all the time. So I think that would be my personality and who I am would probably be the biggest thing holding me back.
And you might be surprised how much that changes with age.
Nah, it might be.
You won't change your principles, I'm sure, but your ability to hold your tongue may become a little bit better.
I'm 29, so I'm still trying to learn some things and trying to get better every day like I tell the kids, but I just am kind of not brash. I don't want to say that because that's maybe too harsh of a word, but I believe what I believe, and if you ask me, I will tell you type thing, so...
I can't say that I don't disagree. I spent most of my life doing the same thing, rubbing people the wrong way.
Yep.
And as you mature, you just learn to have some judgment if that battle's worth fighting.
I am still learning that. There's a lot of battles that I need to just not die on.
But that's what you're used for. Somebody's got to fight for something.
That is true. That is very true.
The one thing that people may not understand is the 8-man and 11-man, it's a different game. Mm-hmm. Same equipment, you know, played outside, played on the grass. But what are some of the differences in the 8-man game as opposed to the 11-man game?
So funny is when I took this job at Archie, I wanted no part of being a head coach for football. I told them, look, guys, I think I'll be a great assistant. I feel much more comfortable coaching basketball. I've never seen an 8-man game in my life, so I think I'd be better for that. Because they said, well, if you want this job, you need to be head coach for football. I'm like, okay, I'll be the head coach for football too. And so I had never seen an 8-man game before, didn't know anything about it. I didn't know how many rules were different. I knew nothing. Immediately, I reached out to my previous coach that I worked under, Nathan Powell, who was the assistant. He was the defensive coordinator for Maryville. And he also had 8-man coaching experience at King City, I believe. So I reached out to him and said, hey, man, I don't know what I'm doing. like, I know I can coach 11-man, but how different is 8-man? And he said, really not that different. He said, there's six left people on the field, three less on offense, three left on defense. He said, everything hits about a gap quicker. And he said, reach out to, because I'm a wing T-based guy.
Mm-hmm.
Albany up north, they ran a lot of wing T. They had just gotten away from it, but the coach up there, Doug Fountain, ran a lot of wing T stuff. I got in touch with him, and I just picked his brain. All summer, got a lot of concepts for him, and I just adapted what I knew that worked in 11-man, and I adapted it and cut everything off by one gap for 8-man. I've figured out in the last 3 years that there are some plays that work great in 11-man that don't really hit the same way in 8-man. Like buck sweep, you know, you really want to have that kick out and then you cut underneath and you got that nice little wall. That doesn't happen in 8-man. So we take that same concept and now we wash everything down and now we're trying to get to the edge that way. So it's the same concept of buck sweep. It's just now everything's hitting a gap shorter. So now I'm washing everything down instead of kicking out. And we got that buck sweep play. It just looks very differently, but it's not the same blocking scheme wise of how we want to do. We just don't have that kick out.
Defensively,
it's a nightmare.
It would have to be.
I hate it. I'll be honest. I can say that with complete confidence. I do not like 8-man defense because having that even number guy makes it so much harder. You are always one person short.
Yeah,
you
don't have that.
You don't have that one person extra like you do an 11-man to have that safety over the top or whatever to feel confident that you make one man miss, you got another guy there. You make one man miss, you're gone.
Right. If your safety comes up too hard,
yeah,
you're vulnerable on the backside.
Yep. So that's the biggest reason. Actually, I did a lot of research and I've reached out to a lot of teams in Iowa and Nebraska, and they run a lot of zone coverages. And so we implemented last year, we were one of the first teams, we were the only team down here that ran a zone. Now I've seen a couple other teams run zone, but we took the defense from Iowa, got a team from Iowa, and we run cover two zone. I love it. It keeps eyes on the ball, it was a nice little Southern accent, but keeps all eight eyes on the ball. And it gives us that sense of having that extra guy. If we have one man miss, we have that safety now to come over and fill. Now, we still do get caught up in different packages and formations that give us trouble. But I feel a lot better with it knowing that I have eight sets of eyes on the ball instead of just one. Man coverage where, they just run them off. We can run this way. No, you can run that way, but we're passing it off. We can see it. We can coordinate it. And so the kids were very skeptical last year, but they had a lot of success and they really, really like it and they prefer it now. So I hate defense still on 8-man just because I still feel like we're a guy short, but moving to our cover two zone has definitely helped us be more confident in our scheme.
I was at your guys' jamboree and then I came up for the Appleton City game, so I got to see a little bit of you guys play. You have some very talented athletes, especially on the offensive side of the ball.
Doesn't seem like you're
hurting for athletes.
No, that is right now we almost have too many athletes, and I hate to say that, but I need some linemen. But we are very blessed with how many athletes we have, and we have very gifted athletes. That's part of the reason with Rich Hill. Our third back could probably start on most conferences around here. Our second back is very, very good. And he would definitely start on majority of the teams in our conference and around our area. So we are blessed with a lot of athletes.
Getting everybody the touches they need. I'm sure that's tough every once in a while, keeping everybody fed, keeping everybody happy.
I do talk to a lot about, hey guys, man, I know I didn't give you a lot of looks last week. Hang on, I'm going to make sure this week we're going to get you one of the first couple plays. We're going to get you here. And honestly, the kids have been buying into our system of it's we, not me. That's another one of the things that we talk about. And they've been really good about buying in and say, hey, coach, we're good. I don't care. As long as we're winning, we're rolling, we're good. And they love that. And so that's what the kids been telling me. I'm sure they're saying something else behind my back. But I haven't heard any grumbling so far. So,
well, the product on the field that I saw looks very good.
Well, thank you.
And hopefully going forward, this is your season to make a move in the right direction and play for the state title. I know the Drexel game. It's going to be a great game. I'm really excited to see how you're prepared how Drexel's prepared. That'll probably be the biggest game in the area for a while.
I'm excited for it. Dean has gotten my number the last few years. He knows how to aggravate me on defense, on offense for sure. We still can put up some points on him, but it is a pain in the butt trying to score on him. And his offense is deadly, so I just need to figure out a way to stop him, and it's going to be a fun one.
Well, good luck going into the rest of the season. I really appreciate you coming out, making the drive down from Archie. I know sometimes coaches don't get to get their thoughts out there, and I appreciate you coming in and being candid with all the questions asked.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thanks for having me down and inviting me down, and I was more than happy to come on down and do this. So thank you very much for the opportunity.
Well, thank you. Never take a L no more. Never take a damn thing slow. All I know is chase this dough and get money.